The Irish Times lead story today is about the National Maternity Hospital. There's articles inside about the National Maternity Hospital, and there's a protest starting today at 2 o'clock in Dublin about the National Maternity Hospital. And perhaps people are not aware of the urgency of matters at the moment, as there's a deadline coming up and it's only 3 weeks away. So my first guest this morning finishes a 7-year term as Master of the National Maternity Hospital at the end of this month. Rona Mahoney, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, your hospital is all, well, your hospital or your soon to be or your hoped to be hospital is all over the papers today. What is the story there at the moment? Explain the crunch date of January 1.
So basically, we're on a building programme at the moment, and the enabling works to build this hospital have started. So that is a fixed programme. Now, in 2017, Europe brought in different legislation surrounding energy requirements for buildings. It's called the Near Zero Energy Buildings, which means that any buildings that are occupied or used by public companies must comply with certain legislation or certain planning elements in them.
Regulation to
conserve energy. So while the design of this building is BREEAM excellent, and indeed in energy terms it is excellent, if we were to comply with the new legislation requirements, there would be some revision of design required. And that would mean, to some extent, you know, going back
through the,
plan again, and then you could have big delays. Of course, there's a cost. I mean, every single month you're ratcheting up in terms of inflation. So if we get and we can get our building started, and because enabling works have started, so actually the 31st deadline, what we need to do to ensure that we comply with transitional legislation can happen, but the rest of the programme must happen as well. And the next steps in enabling are to move Vincent's Pharmacy and to build the car park. And if they don't happen within a reasonable time frame, then you're separating out the enabling works from the main build in a way that really isn't sustainable and may raise questions about compliance with the legislation. So really, the enabling works have started. What we need to do for the main build can happen, but it's critical that the pharmacy and car park then follow.
And what's required for that? The contract to be signed?
The contract to be signed,
and
exactly.
And who's the responsibility
so that's
is that?
With the department, that's with government. So
right.
We need them to sign those contracts and to release the capital available to let that piece happen so that the main build can happen within a critical time frame.
That would be 22 million?
That's 22 million, absolutely.
And that would be the minister's responsibility?
That's within the minister and the gift to the Department of Health.
Yeah. Right. There are a whole range of things in there, but let me go to a very tragic story that meant you, that is the hospital, took the department to court. Can you tell people what happened
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, this is a very tragic story. I mean, this is the death of a young woman in our care, Mrs. Thawley. I think people are familiar with this case now. It's been in the papers many times, and I'm always very conscious when it comes up on a radio programme in the paper how upsetting it is for Mr. Thawley.
Indeed.
And for family, and indeed for the staff who were involved in this. This was a lady who came for a laparoscopic procedure to manage a live ectopic pregnancy, and inadvertently her aorta, which is the main blood vessel in the body coming from the heart, was injured. And as a result of that injury, she died. And this was just awful. I mean, it was beyond catastrophic and beyond tragic. So obviously, in the aftermath of an event like this, investigations take place because we want to learn from this. We want to look back and say,
yes,
well, what happened here and how can we improve this and how can we make sure this doesn't happen again? And so we conducted a very robust internal investigation, but it was peer-reviewed externally. And in fact, we had external people on the board of that investigation to ensure that we were getting as robust and as detailed an investigation And I really believe we did that. And there was thousands of man hours put into that investigation to ensure that no stone was unturned. Subsequently, that was reviewed by the HSE and was endorsed by the HSE. And in fact, the HSE found that we had exceeded national requirements for such an investigation. There was also a coroner's inquest. And a coroner's inquest is a very transparent process. During that process, a family can cross-examine medical staff involved in a case by their own legal team, and that of course is held in public. So in terms of transparency and getting to the nub of things, that's actually an excellent forum. And all of these reports were very consistent. Mr. Thawley required another or wished that there would be another report or investigation to be carried out. We know this because of papers released during the court hearings and released to court. So it's on public record. And we had no problem with this. And in fact, we met with Department of Health in 2017, October, and we were happy for there to be a further investigation. But we did want to know why, what was at issue, what was not answered or what was at issue. And the department really didn't come back to tell us this. And it was a very serious matter for the hospital, because if there was an outstanding clinical issue, we needed to know this, because the primary duty for us is to make sure that if there is a safety issue, that it's hammered down immediately.
Right.
But we weren't getting any answer at all. And then out of the blue, a Section 9 investigation was invoked. Now, Section 9 isn't any investigation. This is a fairly nuclear option. And a minister can only invoke a Section 9 investigation if he has reasonable grounds to believe that there's a serious risk to all of the patients attending the National Maternity Hospital. And the terms of reference of that investigation were to be all emergency procedures and the seniority of people doing them. Now, most of our work is emergency. You know, childbirth is not elective procedure. So most of our daily work is unscheduled, and we have lots of emergencies every day. We manage them really well. We have generally excellent outcomes. So to suggest that our hospital is totally unsafe is something I couldn't stand over. I don't believe my staff are unsafe. I work with a highly skilled staff who do a fantastic job. But those terms of reference would make it nearly impossible for us to operate the hospital. So there would have been a massive risk in terms of accepting that. And so we had to, and we tried so hard, you know, we wrote and we sought meetings, and we tried very hard to avoid that, because we don't want to take a minister. And I believe that Minister Harris, you know, really is committed to driving forward women's healthcare, but we had no choice if we were going to continue operating our hospital but to do this.
Right. And in fact, the judge...
Absolutely. I mean,
said you would have been irresponsible.
He did
not to.
I mean, the judgment is very strong. You know, I mean, it unambiguously flies in the face of reason and common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, and what that judgment means is that decision to invoke Section 9 was unlawful and unambiguously flew in the face of reason and common sense, and that a failure to have taken this case would have been an absence of governance.
On your part.
On our part. And right. There was a lot more in that judgment, but they're the key.
Right. I mean, always bearing in mind that you have a grieving...
Absolutely. And I mean, at the end of the day, you know... all of these technicalities get aired, but at the end of the day, you know, a husband is without a wife today, you know, and a whole future gone. You know, it is a real tragedy.
Yeah, it is indeed. But I presume that didn't make you friends anywhere around the HSE or indeed the Minister's office.
Well, you know, taking a judicial review is a democratic right. I mean, it's there when, you know, inappropriate decisions are taken, and everybody is subject to that challenge. That's a very normal part of business. So the idea that this would lead to not having friends or lead to people taking umbrage, you know, at the level we're dealing with, I would find that hard to believe.
Well, didn't the judge himself even refer to the fact that relations, that this would not improve relations with the minister's office?
There were documents released in relation to attempts to settle out of court prior to going to the court case, etc. But at the end of the day, we have to stand back, you know, taking umbrage, or if stepping back from the hospital, as was suggested, you know, for 9 months, we did notice that the department stepped right back from their meetings in relation to the hospital during the period of judicial review. But if the reason for that was our taking a judicial review, I would find that frankly scandalous. I mean, it is not for departments of health to take umbrage. You know, at the end of the day, we all have to conduct our business responsibly.
If there were a connection between that and the delay on signing this contract, would that scupper the project?
We know that we need to sign this contract. We're on a critical time path, you know, and Marion, so much work has already taken place to bring us to this juncture. So the idea that something like that, which is totally unrelated, could lead to a delay in building a hospital, which isn't a Holles Street issue. This is a matter of national importance. I mean, this is, you know, a really badly needed hospital for women, to my mind, would be unconscionable. I mean, let's go back to what this hospital is about. I operate, you know, in a hospital that is 14,000 square metres. It deals with over 10,000 pregnant women every year. It runs a very busy gynaecology unit. We have 100,000 outpatient attendances every year. We do over 6,000 operations every year, 33,000 ultrasound examinations every year. You know, we deliver 8,000 to 9,000 babies every year, and we look after 2,000 babies every year in our neonatal unit, all in 14,000 square metres in a standalone building in Merrion Square, some parts of which date back to the 1700s. It is totally inappropriate. And in order to keep the hospital patched up and going, we have to spend millions every year just to patch it up and keep it going, and still fall so far below the standard that women should have and the place that women should have to give birth.
Right.
So, and also, we are disconnected from all of the medical and surgical and diagnostic capability that is found on an acute adult, you know, campus. So in the middle of the night, when we have a very unstable patient, we must move her to St. Vincent's, which is 3.5 kilometres away, because we worried she might die otherwise, and because we don't have that capability on site. That's ludicrous.
Right. Talk to me about money. The budget seems to be going up and up and up. When James Riley was talking about it, it was 150,000. We're now talking 350,000. The Children's Hospital started out at 650,000, and I gather now is going to pass the billion. How much does that budgetary shifting matter in terms of this decision?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first figure of 150 was really an indicative sum, and that would have been done before any design was done, and really before any proper budget, you know, could have been estimated.
Right.
So I think we can.
Sorry, I should have said
million, yeah,
not thousands. I beg your pardon.
No, it's fine. But yeah, so the 150 million was indicative, and that was prior to any design being finalised. So you couldn't have had, you know, a very formalised budget at that point. So 300 million is about right. But let's look at the components of it. In the case of National Maternity Hospital, we will sell our hospital, which will probably be worth somewhere between 60 and 100 million by the time the new hospital is built and we're ready to sell. It's a very valuable site in the centre of Dublin in Merrion Square.
Yeah.
Under our charter, we can divest that money to the state effectively, so long as we have security that that money will be invested in a maternity facility that will deliver maternity services for women. Because if you like, technically you could imagine the Earl of Pembroke owns Holles Street, but it is actually a long lease, so that gives effective ownership to the hospital, but we regard it as being held in trust for women, so it really belongs to women. So if we transfer any of those assets, they must go for maternity care. So we will be folding that into the deal. Vincent's are giving a piece of prime medical real estate into the deal as well. And the design of this building means that the National Maternity Hospital element is a discrete envelope, if you like, which is set up in such a way that all the departments are approximated in a way to maximise access to the hospital. It's a really clever design of obstetric terms, but it actually abuts directly into Vincent's Hospital at theatre level. So
right.
It couldn't have anything better. So it slots into a theatre level.
But come back to my
care.
Question.
So Vincent's are putting forward the land for free. We're folding in 100 million. So that will come off the top bill of the 300 million. I think it's absolutely worth that investment in women. This is so badly needed. And what we will have then is a campus that can deliver a whole
right.
range and synergy of healthcare. So you're getting much more than just
right.
some bricks and mortar.
So why is it going down to the wire?
It shouldn't be going down to the wire. And I don't know why these contracts can't be approved, but I do know that the design team in HSD Estates have been excellent in terms of driving forward this programme all the time. I do know that everybody has worked really hard to achieve this design, and we as hospitals have worked really hard to achieve the Mulvey Agreement, which is the governance agreement and which is the passport upon which we accede
right.
Onto Vincent's campus. So all of this has been achieved. this hospital is ready to be built. And there's a choice now.
Did the minister put a spanner in the works when he started talking about a special interest director?
I don't think that's a problem at all. So in the new company, so what will happen is the operation of Holles Street under the charter at the moment will transfer to a new company. So that's what we call a DAC. That's a designated activity company, which will be responsible for delivering the maternity services. That company has a board which oversees the delivery of services.
And the appointment of that board is 4-4-1.
4-4-1. So 4 will be nominated by St Vincent's, 4 by Holles Street, and then we have an international expert in obstetrics and gynaecology.
Well, if you just pause right there,
yeah.
Because the choice of that international expert will be the choice of Vincent's. And the people that are marching today are marching because of historical baggage, I suppose, between the church and women and women's health and treatment of women. And they say, no, 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 that it should be in the entire control of the public.
I'm going to deal with three things there. The first thing I think we need to deal with is religion and ethos. The second thing is how boards operate. And I think the third thing is then is the fact that this is going to be an integrated campus where we're all actually trying to work together. So the first thing, and I know a lot of people, you know, think, unfortunately, that the nuns are going to be running this hospital. So let's just be very clear. The Sisters of Charity will not be running this hospital. They never sought to run this hospital. They never sought to have any involvement in this hospital, and they were never going to have any involvement in this hospital, and they do not have any involvement in this hospital. At the outset and during the Mulvey Agreement, it was very clear that the nuns were preparing to leave Irish healthcare. And in fact, we wrote and were left to write any piece on ethos. There was never a difficulty in any of the negotiation in relation to ethos because we knew that the nuns were stepping away and they had no interest in having any religious influence. St Vincent's nuns have transferred the ownership of their company to a lay company, which is a normal Irish company operating under Irish law. It has got no religious ethos in its constitution. It will deliver its care in relation to best practice nationally and internationally and in accordance with Irish law. Not in accordance with any religion or any canon law, but in accordance with Irish law. And I think it's time that people accept it, because that's the factual position. And Vincent's have stated that factual position. The minister has stated that factual position. We have stated the factual position. And I think it's time that people accepted the factual position, because really, you know, telling women stories that this hospital will be run by religious sisters is really damaging. It frightens women because they may believe that services for them will be restricted in terms of not providing, termination of pregnancy, not providing contraception, when in fact the opposite is the case. When we move to this new hospital, the expansion in services available to women will be revolutionary. There will be a whole host of surgical, medical and diagnostic services that are available to women within the law of the land of Ireland.
Including tubal ligation?
Absolutely, including contraception. Yeah. We already do tubal ligations in Vincent's. We've done several tubal ligations in Vincent's. That isn't a problem. Even at the moment, that isn't a problem.
But there's a point I'm missing here. If you say that the minister is in favour of it, the hospital is in favour of it, there's a deep urgency.
It absolutely is.
What about money?
Yeah.
Is that a problem?
I think it's kind of interesting. There is, I appreciate, there's a huge pressure on capital plan. There's a huge pressure on funding for health service. And we know that. We've all read the articles. We've all experienced the difficulties we have ourselves in the hospital in terms of getting adequate funding to deliver the service that we want to. So there's no doubt about it. There isn't much money around. Our health service is really strapped for cash, like many other services in the country.
Yeah.
And of course, you're right. The Children's Hospital is also a major capital project that will take up a major amount of capital plan. But at the end of the day, it is amazing what can be found when pressure is high enough. And this is one of the capital developments of the country that we cannot afford to compromise on, because the cost in the future will be so enormous if we don't do it now, that actually the arguments are so far in favour that we must simply, put our shoulders to the wheel and get this hospital built.
Do you believe it will be signed by January?
Oh, I do. I mean, I believe the minister has a genuine commitment to women in this country, and I really do believe he wants to see women getting a hospital that they deserve.
So why is it going down to the wire?
That's, I don't understand, but if we take where we are now, the facts of the matter are this hospital is ready to go, it's ready to be built, it's time to sign the contract to allow pharmacy and car park go ahead, to allow the critical time path go away, because this is a hospital that we need so badly.
The former head of the HSE was writing as well today and raising the question that it could be bad relations because of that court case.
But I mean, that would be unconscionable. I can't speak to that. But I mean, if that were the case, that would be scandalous. And you would have to appeal to everyone, you know, let's look at the bigger picture here. And the bigger picture is that what we're trying to build is a hospital that will serve all women in this country, a tertiary hospital that will have a state-of-the-art facility, that will have state-of-the-art access.
Do you fear that's not going to happen?
I can't imagine anyone is going to let this hospital fall apart. It is too important. Because at the end of the day, if this hospital is let fall apart, people must be accountable for that. And at some point, people are going to stand up and have to take accountability for their role in not progressing this hospital and not allowing this hospital to go ahead. And I think that will be a horrible position to be in.
Okay, we'll leave that there for the moment. And talk a little bit about where things are going now. By the way, there was a lot of publicity in the differences between you and your brother-in-law. And you asked him to leave the board eventually.
I didn't. I mean, Peter leaving the board is a matter for the board of the hospital, not for the master. The master would never have such a role, so that's, first of all, incorrect.
You're on the board, aren't you?
I'm a member of the board, yes, absolutely, yeah. But I'm not the board. So it would not be for me to ask anyone to leave the board as an individual, just to be clear.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, people make much of this. In the media, you will always have this, but this is not a domestic issue. You know, the building of a hospital is a matter of critical national importance. So it absolutely is not anything to do with any interpersonal relationships. It's got nothing to do with domestic matter. And I actually think we don't want to distract from the importance of this hospital. So for me, that's really not a story. I have 7 brother-in-laws. They're all brilliant and they're all great fun. I don't agree with all of them on everything. But there it is.
Anyway, I think Peter Boylan went on the record to say he was satisfied with the changes that had been made.
Absolutely.
In terms of governance.
Absolutely.
Because, like others, that fear of being bullied essentially by the church, because we had a theologian on. He's a professor of moral theology, and he was adamant, no ifs, buts or ands, that if something is owned, if land is owned by Catholics, only Catholic kind services can be delivered.
Just to be really clear, the Sisters of Charity have completely left all elements of St. Vincent's Healthcare Group. They have transferred the land, the assets, all elements of any ownership they have and any involvement they have into companies, the constitutions of which are before the charity in process with the charities regulator. This is all happening and in process. And under the terms of this, St. Vincent's Healthcare Group will be a company, a normal company under Irish law. There is absolutely no involvement either in land, either in shareholding, in any element by the Sisters of Charity. And
so
that is the factual position.
So why do you think the people are marching today?
I'm not sure they understand this fact. And I do understand, though, that, you know, Ireland is very bruised by its history, you know, and I understand the hurt that people have because, you know, the stories we've all heard over the last number of years,
yeah.
I mean, would break your heart. The, you know, what people have gone through in years gone by has been really awful. And I think we all acknowledge that. But I also think we have to be careful not to conflate that with our future. What's happening at the moment in relation to this hospital is actually church-state separation. This is actually the church stepping away from healthcare, and this is actually an opportunity being given to build a fantastic hospital. We're not choosing Vincent's for any other reason but that we already have huge links with them. We work with them closely already, and they are a fantastic tertiary hospital that deliver fantastic care. And I think that needs to be acknowledged, and that is the hospital we want to partner with.
But when you talk about bruised, it is true. People are bruised.
Oh, I mean, and more than that, and scarred. I mean, you know.
Well, you think of dreadful practices like symphysiotomy and all of those dreadful things that destroyed people's lives. So, I mean, that's fear is not going to go away.
But I think people can't allow fear to interfere with the facts, and they certainly can't allow fear to interfere with the building of a really important hospital. Right. And I think we have to acknowledge...
Who will technically own that when it's built?
Yeah, so the basically the HSE will effectively own the hospital building. And then they will grant us probably a licence to operate the hospital. Now, coming back to the board, because you're interested in the board.
Yes.
So the board, this will be a separate company and it will be a DAC, which will deliver the maternity services. So, and it was very important to me that we had a separate company because this protects your budget, it protects your funding, and it allows for strategic direction of maternity services, yeah. It protects your staff, and it protects the independence and the autonomy of the operation, which is absolutely critical. Every member of a board has a fiduciary duty to that company. And there are very strict codes and guidelines of how directors behave.
Right.
And should directors not comply with those standards, then directors leave a board. So the idea that saying that Vincent's will nominate, you know, four people onto the board and they're going to be all evil ogres that are going to do bad, that is nonsense. And it shows a lack of understanding of how boards operate.
Right.
Boards are made up by people with skill set. And they have a specific skill set that is there to drive forward the best interests of
okay.
a company.
I thought it was interesting to look at your board of governors and board members. 79 governors on the website this morning. And under the original charter, well, we know about the Archbishop of Dublin was to be chair. Then Haddington Road and another parish priest were to be on it, and also a priest from Westland Row. So there has been a church influence in Hollis Street all along.
Now, just say we don't have 79 members on our board.
No, not on the board.
Yeah. So just
governors.
The actual charter laid out, it was quite ahead of its time in 1903, laid out seven women, seven doctors and seven lay people to be on the board. So that were the requirements for the board of the hospital. So we had a bit of gender balance even back then. The Archbishop is the titular chairman, if you like,
yeah.
but has not been involved. Has had minimal involvement in the
yeah.
hospital, and himself, I think, would like to probably step away and step
out
of the
board. Well, he asked Mary Harney at one stage, and
absolutely.
She said she'd have to change legislation.
But I mean, let's be clear, National Maternity Hospital is not a religious institution.
Okay.
So let's be very clear about that. We are not a Catholic or any other religious institution.
Okay. Furthermore, I suppose, on a personal thing, it's been a very stormy time for you, one way and another, just on a personal level. And you came in for an extraordinary amount of criticism over your salary and top-ups.
I mean, that was part of a general... issue at the time when people were accused that any additional payments were top up, and of course professional fee income, because I'm a doctor and I'm still practicing as a doctor, was misrepresented as a top up, and of course that's very difficult if you're in the public eye. Your salary is likely to be discussed. That's not just for me, but it's for everyone who's in the public eye. But it was quite interesting to be catapulted so much into the public eye, I suppose, and to come home and find journalists in your garden, or find that journalists had called in to your children and asked them questions before you came home from work. It was quite upsetting to find photographs of my children in newspapers in relation to remuneration of CEOs in Ireland. So it was quite an interesting time. And of course, that segued into this whole concept of the first female master, what I wore, practically what I ate. And I don't think my male colleagues were treated in the same way at the time.
Right. I'm going to take a break there. I'm talking to Rona Mahoney, who's just coming to the end of her term as Master of the National Maternity Hospital, and we'll be back with you after this.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, I'm talking to Rona Mahoney. She's to be Master of the National Maternity Hospital. Can I just run through a couple of things with you kind of briefly? Because we hear about all sorts of chaos in the HSE, and we hear assertions that the system of master works more efficiently than whatever other system there is in the other things, which seems to have a lot of management.
Yeah. So just to outline what is the mastership system. So it's not just the one master person, but effectively I operate at the operational side of the hospital as part of an executive management team. So that means we have our finance director, we have our secretary manager, director of midwifery and medicine, clinical director, HR director, and clinical risk director. And if you like, that's our senior executive management team. But the point is, it's the clinical consideration that is first and foremost within that operational team, so that everything that we do and patient is very much the centre of all our consideration, and therefore the focus is clinical. I then report to a board along with the executive management team, and this is a really important point. We have a dedicated board at National Maternity Hospital. They give their skill set pro bono, and we have an amazing board, and the amount of work they do is quite extraordinary.
And no pay.
And no pay.
Yeah.
And this is huge skill set in the legal world, accounting world, actuary world, and that skill is all brought to us, but it provides checks and balances. I have to account for myself every month, both on the clinical side, on the financial side, and ensure that we're running our business as efficiently as we can.
And how does that compare with other places within hospitals, I suppose, within the HSC?
So just the final piece of the board is strategic direction. You must be developing strategically the whole time rather than just getting through every day. Now, if you look at HSE hospitals, the maternity units there are often just units that are embedded in large acute adult hospitals. Now, large acute adult hospitals have a completely different strategic focus and strategic direction. So there's very little room for your maternity hospital as part of that focus. And also there isn't dedicated separate funding.
Yeah, but if you come back to the fact that I hear over and over and over again that nobody is accountable, nobody's responsible, nobody's can say the buck stops here, so that then nobody's responsible.
Well, the difficulty is, whatever the accountability, absolutely responsible, you need to have a leadership piece within each of the maternity units that's
it's
clearly
not
defined.
I'm comparing it with hospitals in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, all hospitals have a CEO, but actually it's not the frontline CEO system in the hospitals that is lacking accountability. It's when you go above the hospital. So if you think about it, I report to my board, and my next relationships are with Ireland East. And this was the system set up by James Riley in 2013, that our hospital system would devolve to a series of trusts, a series of groups.
Did that happen?
Analogous. It's kind of happened. So basically, a series of groups which are analogous to the trusts in England have been set up. There's six geographical groups and paediatrics. And they are meant to become a network, so that you have a network system. So that I operate within Ireland East, which is a network of 11 hospitals with a population of 1 million people. And you devolve the autonomy to those networks, which can then deliver the care.
It's actually, and who's running that?
So at the moment, we have a CEO of the network, Mary Day, who's absolutely excellent. There's meant to be a board, although that's been really slow to be appointed. And they haven't been given statutory existence. So there hasn't been the legislation passed to make them a statutory entity. Now, the networking is a really good idea.
Yeah, because when I talk to friends who are nurses or doctors, now this may be very unfair, but nearly unanimously, they give out about management and layers of management and layers
absolutely.
Of management.
Absolutely. So that's Ireland East. There's still the HSE, which has actually grown. I mean, corporate HSE has actually been growing. So you would imagine if you're setting up a group system, you know what I mean, that the HSE would be devolving. I mean, it was meant to devolve into a commissioning body so that you would then devolve the autonomy of the running of the hospitals to the group. So that makes total sense. But at the moment, we have two systems. So we have the entire HSE system running full tilt, except that they can't find anyone to run it. And we have the group system running full tilt. And now on top of that, in maternity, we have the National Women and Infants Healthcare Programme that's meant to be responsible for all new strategy underneath the maternity strategy, and you have the Department of Health and you have the clinical care programs within the HSC. Now, that is really difficult environment for me to deal with, because if I want a decision made, let's take an example, a consultant post approved.
Yeah.
I've got to go through all those bodies to try and get a consultant post approved. That takes ages and sometimes several years. It's completely unacceptable. So what you have is confused lines of accountability and authority, and that delays decisions being made, and we need a much cleaner governance system above the hospitals particularly.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the next topic to cover, because oddly enough, on the same day as you'll be leaving, abortion services will be starting. And we've had suggestions that people aren't ready. How are you going to deal with objectors? How are you going to deal with conscientious objectors within your own staff? Do people go in the same door? All of those kind of things. Where is it now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is quite challenging, and we know the services are already very stressed at National Maternity Hospital. We know that infrastructurally finding space to conduct a new clinical service is really challenging, and that's our main concern. A lot of work has been done, actually, in terms of looking at the models of care and the guidelines, and they're all very important. The legislation's only now been finalised, and actually elements of that legislation do have big operational implication, like one doctor certifying and then that doctor being required to actually perform the termination. That would be operationally nearly impossible. And all of that is still being finalised. Guidelines are still being finalised, model of care pathways. Huge amount of work has gone into that. The next phase then is translating that into operation, and that requires then a place for the operation to happen, and obviously a recruitment of staff and training of staff and the educational piece. Now, you know, I understand that, you know, the minister is really keen to roll out this service, and he does that because he wants to help women, you know, out of goodness. But at the end of the day, it's very unusual that legislation would be finalised and within, you know, days an entire service is rolled out. You know, if you look at other elements of legislation have been passed, that is actually quite a big ask and quite a big challenge. We're working really hard to achieve that, but I think we will struggle to provide the service we'd like to provide by 1st of January. The bits we're more advanced in will be fetal anomaly, because that's something we do already and we have big experience and teams in terms of the diagnostic element. There are still resource requirements in terms of post-mortem pathology and genetics that will be very hard to fill. But, you know, we are probably more advanced in that element. For women who are sick or who might die, that's no problem at all. You know, we'll manage that, of course, that's no problem. The bit that we will struggle with is really the 9 to 12 week, because we're not sure how many women will fit into that group and how many women will come forward. In Hollis, we've got to find a place. You know, we need to find a minor procedure territory where we can do...
Will you be separating them from pregnant women?
We'll be doing our best, but, you know, we've the envelope of Hollis Street, I don't know whether you've ever been into the hospital yet.
I have indeed, yeah.
But trying to separate out
women...
It's
Victorian.
It is, but it's also really cramped. And it's going to be really challenging, actually, to try and find separation, because already women are having miscarriage. You know, unfortunately, they're walking through a hospital with pregnant women. It's really far from
very
ideal.
Very difficult.
And it's going to be very challenging for us. And, of course, even if we find a corner of the hospital that will allow us to do our best in that regard, that means decanting another service and having to find a home for another service. And then clinicians, you know, have a professional duty to their patients in gynaecology to make sure that that work isn't laid down. And I also think we need to be really careful. We need to really support staff. You know, some of the messaging through is just started by the first and don't worry about it and just get on with it.
Yep.
Yes, we're familiar with the medications, and yes, we're familiar with the surgical procedure. But actually, we do need to really support staff. They're very fearful of rolling out a new service in a really highly charged environment and under huge scrutiny. You know, we've just seen what happened at Cervical Check. So staff are really fearful about any new service and how that's going to run out. And so we need to be really careful to mind staff and make sure they feel safe, so that in turn our patients are safe, you know. And there's still some work to be done. There's still educational work to be done. But I think the best approach is to knuckle down and do it and not get involved with unnecessary rows, and just, you know, everyone
do
has
it.
To do their best and just get on. And we have to identify the elements that are outstanding and get them done in a strategic way as quickly as possible. But all that won't be done by the 1st of January.
You don't think the service will be available on the 1st of January?
Not that it won't be available, but the entire service, I don't think, will be the way we would like it to be by the 1st of January, standing from here.
But will it start?
I'm sure there will be terminations, absolutely. But I still think the service that we would like to see rolled out will not be ready in its entirety by the 1st of January. There's too many things that are just being finalised at the moment. And I think we need, rather than taking this view of...
Are you wobbling, to quote your brother-in-law again, because I heard him on the radio yesterday saying that some of the consultants who were saying, you know, it's too quick, it's too soon, we're not ready, let's defer it. And he quoted, I think it was Margaret Thatcher, in some event, telling somebody not to lose their nerve, just get out and do
this
it.
This isn't about wobbling. I'm not likely to wobble after 7 years that I've been through. I'm a complete advocate, as you know, of introducing termination of pregnancy. I mean, I'm absolutely an advocate, but there are logistical issues. Like, find me a place in Hollow Street that's perfect and that I can provide compassionate care in a separate place. That's an infrastructural issue, not a motivational issue. The motivation's absolutely there. We have done loads of work. We've had great interface with the community, because remember, this service is an interface, you know, between community and the hospital. I'm really keen to develop that interface, because at the moment our cares are often siloed between community and hospital, and I'm quite excited about the kind of collaboration we can have with community and with the hospital. But I have an infrastructural problem, and I don't think anyone can deny that. You know, find me a space, you know, and that's why I come back to it. We need to move our hospital so that we have proper facilities so that we can give all this care in a proper, compassionate environment.
Will somebody coming to you seeking a termination, will they come in the same door?
There's not much choice in Hollow Street. I mean, we've got a side door, we've got a front door. People are welcome to come in where they like. We could develop a back door, but would people feel even more estranged if they have to come in a back door? I mean, you know, it's a difficult question, and I don't like the idea that women have to be, you know,
separated
and have to kind of shimmy in a back door, you know.
Right.
There are two doors mainly in Hollow Street, one onto Mount Street, but it does come through the baby clinic and the antenatal clinic, and if you come in the main front door, you will meet pregnant women. If we have a back door, maybe we can find a route where there's no chance you'll meet a pregnant woman, but I just can't see that in the tiny envelope we operate in.
Right. Okay. How did you find dealing with questions at the Dáil Committee?
Back in 2013 was my first outing in the Oireachtas, I suppose. I probably didn't really appreciate the Oireachtas. The day before, you know, my father had rung me and kind of said, I hear you're up in the Oireachtas tomorrow. And I thought this would kind of be a normal kind of meeting where you just pop in and answer a few questions. And then my father sort of broke it to me that it was a bit more formal and that I should be very careful of everything that I said. And I remember him coming down to me that night, and the two of us sitting at the kitchen table, you know, discussing back and forward. And then in I went, and I said what I had to say in my statement. At least you have an opening statement, which is kind of settles you down a bit. And then you have a barrage of questions, you know. And one of the things is I have terrible handwriting, so I was trying to write down and jot down the questions and then trying to read my writing and say, God, what was that third question? So they give you a kind of series of 5 or 10 questions in a row, and you have to try and answer all of them as best you can. So...
Did you feel it was beneficial to general knowledge, or did you feel it was hostile? And
oh, no, I thought it was a really important thing to do. No, yeah. I didn't have a problem. Of course, the questions were going to be... this is 2013, you know, and actually we've come such a long way in 2018 that we found the second round of discussions prior to the referendum,
right.
I think, a lot easier, and that we were able to discuss things. But in 2013, it was still relatively new to stand up,
right,
and discuss this publicly, you know.
Yeah.
And so maybe the questioning was more hostile, but it's terribly important. I was there just to give... my experience as a doctor. It's not a political experience, it's an experience as a doctor. And I felt it was very important that I would make that contribution. So I was very comfortable,
right,
really.
Yeah. Can I just cut across here? Roisin Shortall, the Social Democrat, well, leader of the Social, co-leader of the Social Democrat, has just rung in to ask Rona. She says it's the first time that she's heard that the nuns have divested themselves from their involvement in the new hospital. When did that happen?
But I mean, it can't be the first time. The nuns made that statement last year, and Vincent's made that statement last year. We concurred.
The
nuns were very clear in their statement last year that they were leaving healthcare. What's happened now is just...
It's the ownership of the land will be owned by the company.
The nuns laid out very clearly last year that they were leaving healthcare, and as part of that process, that their shares and all their, you know, company involvement would be transferred to an Irish company operating under Irish law. And that was made very clear back in 2017. The constitutions of Vincent's company, there's a holding company and then the St. Vincent's Healthcare Group, those constitutions are now in process with the charities regulator. There is no reference to any religious ethos within the constitution of those companies. They will deliver care consistent with best clinical, medical practice without any religious influence whatsoever.
Okay,
and they will not own the land anymore or the assets. All of that is gone.
Well, the fact that they won't own the land would be very critical in terms of canon law if any new person came along that wanted to impose a view.
Yeah, I mean, the Vincent Company will operate according to Irish law, not according to canon law. Canon law is irrelevant.
Okay. And has that all been... completed.
That's all in process. It's all in process with the charity regulator. So okay. The constitutions of the new companies have to be submitted to the charity regulator for approval.
Okay.
That's all standard.
Okay. Rona delivered my children. She's a great doctor, but I'd prefer Hollis Street to stay where it is than move anywhere with any religious links, including the name St. Vincent's. Delighted you've Rona on. She's wonderful. Delighted we have her here in Ireland. Please thank her for all she does, despite all the criticism and pressure. And that comes from Evie. Marion, just to say well done to Dr. Rona Mahoney. Had all my children there in the 70s and 80s. Most of my grandchildren have been born there recently. It's a wonderful hospital and always was. Just to say thank you from Mary. In relation to the new National Maternity Hospital, who are the investors of this separate company that Rona Mahoney mentioned?
So it's not a question of investors. So basically the new DAC will effectively... DAC is a designated activity company. Yeah. So just to go through it again, the operation of National Maternity Hospital, which currently operates under charter, the operation of the hospital will transfer to a modern company. So that's a modern company structure with the board in line with all modern company requirements. That board will oversee the provision of services. That board has a series of reserved powers, and this is very important. The reserved powers ensure that that board is absolutely independent in relation to the autonomy of the operations in that company, in relation to funding, in relation to staffing, retention of the mastership model, and most importantly, control of the building. And those reserve powers are actually guaranteed by the minister, who of course is guarantor of the Mulvey Agreement, by virtue of a golden share, which is actually an ownership piece. So the minister has part ownership of this company. The company itself is a subsidiary of the St. Vincent's, the new St. Vincent's group, and that's no problem to me because we are in a campus. We are trying to co-locate with St. Vincent's. We're not going out there to build a wall and saying, we don't want to deal with you. We want to exist as part of a coherent campus.
Okay. What are you going to do on the 1st of January?
Sleep. I'll probably go for a run, read a book, sigh of relief. It will be nice to have some time back. The 7 years has been quite an immersion. There's been very little else to think about, as my family will tell you. I am constantly either in the hospital or thinking about it. So I am looking forward to a little bit of time and space.
Would you be tempted to go for a second term?
You can't. It's not an option. You'd have to go to rock this. And I don't think it's a good thing. The new master coming in is Professor Shane Higgins. He's absolutely fantastic. It's really nice for me to be handing over to Shane. I think it's really good and healthy for the hospital that we have a new master every 7 years. It brings new energy and new excitement.
And do you stay on the board then, or do you move on?
I can stay on the board, and obviously normally we go back to being a consultant, so I go back to being a foot soldier, if you like. That's the normal fate of masters. We'll see. I mean, I'd like to think there's another adventure somewhere along the way in the future.
Like?
You know, who knows? So I'll probably spend the next year or two thinking about, but I think I'd like to continue, you know, to make a contribution to healthcare. I don't think I want to go back and just practice purely forever. I think we are beholden, actually, to ensure that we make a maximum contribution to developing healthcare and to developing issues for women.
Yeah.
And I would hope that I would continue somehow my advocacy.
But politics are out of the question.
Out of the question.
Out of the question. Okay. There's a tradition that he will come knocking on the door, is that right?
So it's a nice tradition. So effectively, the front door of the hospital onto Mount Street used to be only opened every 7 years or for visiting dignitaries or the odd time during the year. And then on the 1st of January, the master knocks on the door and is sort of admitted and thus becomes master. I've slightly not ruined that, but the doors, front door is actually open all the time now because I've put the baby clinic there because there's no step at that front door. So it means all the buggies can get in and out safely. So I built a baby clinic just in front of the front door to allow for the buggies. But nonetheless, there will be a ceremonial opening of the front door and Professor Higgins will be admitted to great excitement. And I think the hospital is really excited and very warm about Shane becoming master.
Yeah, because you also say that very good doctors that you have met are afraid to go in to Obs and Gynae now because of...
I think it's a really important issue. And this all comes to the sort of medical negligence issue that we have in Ireland and also to the environment in which we operate in. So obstetrics, as I always say, is a very high-risk specialty. It's very procedure-dependent. Those procedures are very time-dependent and the outcomes can be catastrophic. Adverse outcomes for us can be maternal death, the death of a baby or a baby that's very damaged. When we look at medical negligence in this country, it's spiralling out of control. The current liability at the end of 2017 for negligence claims in Ireland is almost 2 billion. Two-thirds of that is related to maternity care. And that's largely because of cerebral palsy, because the quantum of settlement in cerebral palsy is so enormous because these children need so much support. But the problem is, under the law of tort, in order for parents to actually be compensated, they have to prove that the doctor is negligent. And of course, causation cerebral palsy is actually really difficult. All of the big epidemiological studies, the expert opinion tells us that, you know, asphyxia from labour is, you know, accounts for about 10 or 20% of cases of cerebral palsy. It actually, term cerebral palsy remains a mystery. The incidence is about 2 per 1,000. It hasn't changed in 30 years, despite the increase in cesarean section. CTG, which is the tracing of heartbeat we use during labour, is constantly used in court cases, but has never anywhere been shown to reduce the incidence of cerebral palsy.
Okay.
So we've got a huge problem with litigation and this frightens doctors.
Yeah, I can well believe it and I presume that the insurance runs up. A number of people have asked me this question again. Do the nuns need permission from Archbishop Martin for the Vatican to divest themselves?
No, actually this Sisters of Charity, they can take advice but they don't need permission, but the divestment is well underway. I mean, people will have to accept this is happening. The constitutions of the companies have been rewritten. The Sisters of Charity have nothing to do with the new National Maternity Hospital.
My last question to you then is about the hospital itself. With all the to-ing and fro-ing between you, the HSE, the Department of Health, etc., etc., do you believe they're going to sign this before the 1st of January?
I can't believe otherwise. Come back to the central point here. This hospital is so important. To allow this hospital fall over would be unconscionable.
Okay.
I don't believe anyone's going to do that.
You hope nobody's going to do that.
I believe that no one's going to do that. It would be unconscionable. It would be scandalous.
OK, we will leave it there. Rona Mahoney, soon to be out of a job. Well, nearly out of a job.
I will be now anyway, I'd say.
OK, listen, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. And on that note, we will pause for the Angelus.